Hello, welcome to another edition of the Nerd Punks podcast number 11. This time I chat to Martin Briggs from the Film School Dropouts podcast. We chat about films in all their nerdy glory. If you enjoy the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/nerdpunks to give us a few quid to supporting the podcast. Lights, camera, action.
Yeah, we just recorded a new episode for the podcast earlier today. We went to see Their Finest, which is the historical drama with Bill Nighy. But we mostly talked about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Cool. Well, let's start off. Tell us about Film School Dropouts.
Film School Dropouts is a podcast started literally because the clue's in the name. We are all Film School Dropouts. We all did various things academically and didn't complete them, but spent so much time doing it that we thought we may as well do something with it. We spent half the time in the cinema anyway. So a podcast seemed like the obvious solution. Me and Andy have both done sort of community radio shows for years and stuff like that, so it seemed like the logical thing to do. And it gives us an excuse to keep going to see films every week, so why not?
Bang in. So I'll go in fast and strong. What's the greatest film ever made?
For me, that I think we'd all say completely different things on that. Mm-hmm. For me, that's Harold and Maud is my favourite film, just because I really like sort of dark comedies and things like that. I mean, I think horror is probably my overall favourite genre. Mm-hmm. Well, Harold and Maud's just one of those really sort of well-written, great dialogue-driven sort of black comedies. It's a young man obsessed with death falls in love with an old woman who's about to die but is in love with life. It's just such a lovely premise that I don't think anybody could not like that film.
I often used to feel like I had an opinion on what was the greatest film and my favourite film. Do you think those are different things? Can you go, this is the greatest film ever made, but actually this is my favourite film? Or do you think that they're the same thing for you, Harold and Maud?
Oh, no, yeah, they're definitely different things, but it's very difficult to sort of objectively weigh up what the greatest film ever made is, isn't it? It all depends on the criteria, I suppose. So I suppose, yeah, it's a difficult one to answer. Well, no, I would say there were different things. It's definitely a lot easier to say what your favourite of something is, and I tend to prefer that kind of language when talking about anything, whether it's films or music or whatever, really. So
what films kind of like do you remember really fondly when you were a kid? For me, just for example, I remember the obvious ones for me are the Star Wars and kind of big kind of sci-fi fantasy stuff, but I remember really fondly watching the Asterix films with my dad. I remember going to see the Page Master at the cinema with him. I remember we went to go see the Power Rangers movie together. I'm a child of the 90s, as you can probably tell. What kind of for you was like this, that do you remember like films really, really fond memories from when you were kind of younger?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is something we were talking about earlier on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Actually, as we were talking about Guardians and how that might be one of those films for kids now.
Yeah.
For me, like, I mentioned horror earlier, and I think the first, not really a horror film, but the first thing like that I ever saw would have been, have you ever seen The Monster Squad, the 80s movie? It's a little bit like Goonies, but with the sort of classic Universal monsters like Dracula and Frankenstein's monster and the Wolfman and all of those kind of characters are in there. And it's, yeah, it's sort of Goonies-like comedy. That probably, because that was the first thing like that I saw, that's sort of largely to blame for a lot of this.
That love of the horror, the monsters, the weird, the twisted stuff, but in a kind of darkly comic way.
Yeah, in a kind of fun sort of way, yeah. Jurassic Park was one that I was going on about earlier, because that was sort of the first time being at the cinema and seeing the queue round the block thing that you used to get, obviously don't get anymore at cinemas, but that was sort of what cemented really loving going to the cinema in particular, because Film School Dropouts is mainly it's like current cinema releases, and we like to try and persuade people to actually go and watch films on that, you know, that scale of screen and so forth, because obviously there's a lot of debate about if you've really seen a film, if you've seen it on a mobile phone screen, for example. So we're very keen on trying to keep cinema in its proper places, stuff like that. And I think, yeah, Jurassic Park was a big deal when I was 10. You know, I got took out a Cub Camp early to go and see it on the day it came
Whoa!
Out.
Yeah,
impressive. It was like, must see it. No.
I think there's that enormity of it, of, you know, when you're little, and we used to drive out to the Warner Brothers cinema in York, which is like on the outskirts. It wasn't like going into town. It was like my dad drove us to it, which I thought was amazing. And like, yeah, seeing it in this massive screen, I think is quite awe-inspiring. And it's really interesting to think about those first moments, those first experiences with cinema, and still saying, you still got to see these big action films, and not just necessarily action films, but big films, not on an iPod or a little screen.
Yeah. But the first film I ever saw in a cinema was a re-release of The Jungle Book. Right. I remember my dad saying, would you like to go to the pictures? And I didn't know what that was. So first scene, it was kind of, yeah. That's a really early memory, actually. I think these things, it'd be interesting, like I was saying, what would those films be for people, you know, kids now, when they grow, will they have similar experiences? And yeah, it's nice to see some films that come out that might be contenders for that in the future. But I think it will still carry on.
Go for it. Finish.
That said, like with things like some cinemas have like the 4DX stuff and stuff like that. Now it's more of a ride and stuff, which I imagine can only really be for kids. I mean, the first show in the Guardians we saw last week, we saw in 4DX, and actually just felt a little bit sick afterwards. Well, I felt like I'd been on a boat for 2 hours, that kind of thing. But who knows? I imagine that'd be really fun if you're, you know, like 8 or something.
So did it enhance the experience much, or was it, as you say, just a little bit queasy?
Mostly a little bit queasy, but there were bubbles at one point. That was entertaining.
That keeps the kids entertained. If the film isn't, it's like, oh, bubbles everywhere. That's nice.
Yeah. Maybe they just have an emergency bubble button in case kids are getting restless. So they just make it worse, wouldn't they?
So I was thinking about this, you know, in preparation for the interview, and I was thinking about. So I work in theatre and I work in poetry, and Sunday night I was at a stand-up gig, and I think that, you know, you say to someone, oh, are you into poetry? And, you know, some people go, no, I'm not really into poetry. And you say, are you into theatre? No, I'm not really into theatre. But most people like films. It's quite unusual you'll get someone that goes, oh, I don't really like films as a medium of art. And I'm just interested in that idea that it's this universal love for the film genre, whether it's your massive blockbusters or your rom-coms or your like horror or your alternative non-mainstream stuff, that generally most people are into films.
Yeah, films really, it's a combination of all different kinds of art, isn't it? Because obviously the writing and acting, the cinematography, from the soundtrack and everything else, all things combined into one. I think that universality is only really becoming a more of a thing, as well as like with sort of globalization and so forth. Obviously, a lot of films sort of trying to really push how universal they are, so it can be understood across cultures and things, which it's difficult to say whether that's been a positive or negative thing, but it's certainly true that it is probably the most universally appreciated of arts, apart from music, I suppose, because it's very rare that you'd hear anyone say they don't like music either, though. With varying degrees of passion, I suppose, is the difference, isn't it?
I did film studies at A-level, and I kind of felt over those 2 years that I caught up a lot on films, and I had a list in my head of films that I hadn't seen that I feel like you should have seen. For example, Clockwork Orange or Trainspotting or Citizen Kane, and kind of like I'd go to car boot sales and or I'd go to the library and I'd go, right, The Shining, that's meant to be a film. I've seen that referenced on The Simpsons, like it's always in like top lists, it's a cultural thing, I'm gonna watch this film and try to like expand my film knowledge. Was there a point when you were kind of getting into films and you were like, right, I need to kind of tick off this stuff, or was it just an organic thing of like going, oh, I'll watch this or I'll watch that?
It's a little bit of both. Like I found that I I started wanting to do things like that because I'd kind of started to see films that were a bit more interesting in that way. But at the same time, I then like realized just how much there was that I hadn't seen. Mm. And yeah, sometimes I'm trying to find the balance between watching the films that you're supposed to have seen underlined and finding the time to just watch Godzilla films. Things like that. Don't know. Maybe I get the balance right. Maybe not. You definitely have that. But then there's always something that you haven't seen. Like, I mean, I've never seen The Godfather, which was probably it's a ridiculous thing to have never seen. Mm-hmm. I think, especially if you're going to do a film podcast.
That was one of those again. Like that was on my list, and I remember watching it. But I never got around to watching Godfather 2, and partly because I was like, yeah, that was good. It wasn't my sort of film, so it's kind of like. You can kind of tick it off the list, really, I suppose. In my head, I was like, well, I don't need to watch any more because I've seen the first one and it wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah. I think that's probably what put me up as well. I never really enjoyed the sort of like gangster films in general, though. I suppose there's other reasons to watch it. You know, people go on about the cinematography in the film and so on. So yeah, I suppose maybe that's it. It seems a little bit more laborious if it's just you're supposed to watch it, but you're not really into that kind of thing.
So the podcast, have you found that you watch loads more films now that you do it? Do you feel like you have this duty to go see the latest films, or were you always watching it and now it's just nice to chat about it?
It's that way around. We were doing that anyway, so it just sort of seemed like if we do something with it, then it looks like less of a waste of time. Spent all of our time in the cinema, because I think we go at least once a week. I think some of us more. I mean, Andy that is also on the podcast with me. He pretty much does go to see everything that comes out, even if it's stuff that he wouldn't expect to like or whatever. It's just what he does. So he probably goes the most out of the three of us. But yeah, all of us at least do something every week. I mean, I live about 5 minutes away from my cinema, so sometimes I just sort of wake up on a day off or something and think, may as well go and see something and just watch whatever's on. Like I said, we saw Their Finest today, and it's not the sort of thing that we would have normally watched, but we like the look of the cast and the subject matter was something different. So I think, yeah, fine, give it a look. But yeah, of course, there's an awful lot of rubbish that comes out as well. Like we ended up watching Sausage Party last year. That's one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Really?
yeah, just offensive mostly. Anyways, it's like, it's just banter, but no.
It seemed like it was a Family Guy cutaway gag stretched over 90 minutes, and I don't want to see a Family Guy cutaway gag in 30 seconds, never mind 90 minutes.
Yeah, it's not going to go anywhere good over 90 minutes, is it? And it didn't. You do end up watching a lot of rubbish as well, I suppose. But I think that's one of the things that we try to do with the podcast is like, so whether it would be worth spending about a tenner, you know, a lot of cinema tickets are these days, so it's like, you know, things to avoid and things to, definitely keep your eye on. But then I think we probably tend to focus more on the sort of like genre film sort of stuff that comes out, a lot of the comic book ones and horror, sci-fi, that sort of thing, for the most part. But yeah, try to throw in a little bit of variety with the dramas and stuff like that as well.
Where's the best place to sit in a cinema? Do you have a preferred spot, right at the back, in the middle, at the front? Does it vary on films, or is it not that important?
I suppose it really depends on the size of the actual theatre that you're in. But typically, I suppose sort of top of the middle, like towards the back, but in the middle. But I mean, you don't want to be too high. You definitely don't want to be in the front, because no one likes sort of craning up a fucking 10-foot Tom Cruise or something.
Oh, no. What's that?
Yeah. All right, fine.
I kind of like... discovered podcasts over the last few years. I was probably going to mention them sooner or later. I'm a big Wittertainment fan, and I'm kind of like listening to Mark Kermode, Simon Mayo, but then obviously got into lots of other podcasts and doing this one, and I feel like the podcast for me has replaced the zine in some ways. Is that I used to make a lot of zines, and now I quite enjoy talking about the same things, like, you know, talking about kind of punk stuff and nerd stuff. But I quite like having it as a conversation that can be recorded and kept online. Is there something you really enjoy about the podcast format where you can natter and chat, and is it still very DIY in that respect?
Yeah, ours is definitely really DIY. I know some people, you know, do it on quite professional, almost like professional radio sort of setups. But we've just got a Zoom handy recorder, coffee table, and then we edit it in Audacity. I think, like,
same,
yeah,
here.
yeah, it's true what you say. Like, it's replacing zines in many ways. I think just because you can just have an idea and have the podcast finished and online by the end of the day that you had the idea on, if you wanted to. You know, it's a very instant kind of format, and I think you can reach a lot more people than you could with zines, because obviously with a zine you're kind of limited to how many copies you can afford to make in the first place and things like that. So you don't get that with a podcast, though. Of course, it'd be a shame to see zines disappear entirely, which they do seem to be doing.
Yeah, so I, for those keen avid zinesters out there, I didn't want the podcast to replace the zine, but certainly I've kind of like the energy I put into making zines, I feel like I'm enjoying the energy into podcasts. Maybe I'll do a nerd punk zine to go with the podcast and transcribe everything down in the podcasts.
Always a temptation to end up trying to do all of the different things that you might think of, isn't there? Yeah.
So I know that, like myself, you're a lover of the punk genre of music. Is there any? There are a couple of punk films out there. I was just curious whether there were any that you were like, whether they're documentaries or kind of films about kind of the punk scene or punk celebrities that you were like, that's quite a favourite. For example, there's like the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, which is this complete and utter fabrication of the Sex Pistols. That
is like a
fantasy thing that, like, you know, John Lydon said that is absolutely not what happened, and it's Malcolm McLaren just being flexible with the truth is an understatement, but kind of stands up as this kind of weird, grotesque creation of the 1970s, kind of as the height of punk.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think with that they would definitely go with the legend rather than the truth, weren't they? It'll make a better film. I mean, it's quite a good documentary, really. Except, like you say, very little of it's true. I mean, there was a band called the Sex Pistols. That much was true with that one. I really like the Salad Days 80s DC hardcore documentary.
Yeah, I saw that a couple of months ago now for the first time. It was good.
Yeah, that one's up. But I mean, that's sort of like, I'm especially into that kind of punk anyway. And there was a lot of stuff that I didn't know about, like, can't remember the name of the type of music that they all got into, a kind of like sort of funk disco sort of thing that was going on in DC at the same time that they all started taking influence
from.
Oh,
yeah,
I
remember that bit.
The Fugazi stuff.
Yeah. And yeah, I can't remember that either. Like, yes, but yeah, like kind of the genres kind of mixing up and mashing and learning from another as the scene went on. Was kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him saying that, like, those bands didn't really like the punk bands, but the punk bands liked them. And so, definitely a good one. But I suppose, like, in terms of like punk films, there's films about punk rock, and then there's films that are made with a kind of punk approach as well, like the trauma films and a lot of the sort of like underground horror stuff and that kind of thing is a kind of very punk approach to filmmaking. So you've got a lot of that. There's, I mean, you know, a lot of DIY filmmakers out there. There's a guy locally called Dan Rutter that does Rindhouse Productions, and he sort of incorporates local bands into his films and things like that. It is always nice to see that kind of crossover between like different little DIY scenes and things like that. I struggle to think of any like really good films about punk rock, though. Like,
have you seen Taqua Cause?
I haven't seen the film. I've read the novel. And such, I think they had really a unique position as well, didn't they? Being sort of American and Muslim and into the punk scene and everything that goes along with that. So definitely recommend finding out about it.
Do you think that, I mean, I in terms of nerdiness, I feel like when I was a kid, like, it wasn't cool to like Spider-Man. Like, that wasn't a thing that, like, you're allowed to do. And now, obviously, we've got Spider-Man Homecoming coming out, and the Marvel Cinematic Universe is this huge behemoth that is, like, conquering the airwaves. Do you think, I don't know if you come at that from a different perspective, but I feel a little bit like to say my culture is a bit problematic because it's nerdiness rather than like an actual kind of identity. But I do feel a bit like something was lost in this thing that I really liked when I was a kid. And now it's this huge machine. And obviously, you know, if kids enjoy it, that's great. But I kind of go, okay, so they're making this other film and they're cashing in on this and that. I don't know if you have any thoughts on the kind of capitalization of these stories.
Well, I think it's true to quite a large extent that it's, when you say, you know, sort of become a bit of a behemoth in cinema, it's not just sort of bad for, if you want to call it geek culture or not that, not just in that sense, but it's kind of a little bit damaging to cinema as a whole, because the cinema, you know, the summer blockbuster is a big Marvel film these days, and you kind of know what you're going to get with those films as well. I mean, Guardians being an exception and maybe one or two others, but by and large, they're pretty much just crash bang wallop. Seen them over and over again, and it's true. Like when we were little, I mean, you had things like the X-Men cartoon was a big success and stuff like that. But reading comics wasn't something that every kid was doing. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people say they're big Marvel fans and are probably just watching the films as well. So, I mean, I think comics are maybe more popular than they used to be, but it's definitely not on a par with how popular the films are.
I think there was a new Spider-Man Homecoming trailer. I watched it today and it was bits in I'd not seen. But I remember watching the kind of first proper trailer for it, I guess it was a month or so now, and just been like, well, I know the film. Like, it feels like it was absolutely like act one, act two, and act three in a nutshell. And my mate was very blunt. He was like, yeah, but Henry, it's a film for kids. Like, you know, like at the end of the day, like they're not picking up on that. But like it did feel a bit like, you know, you're hoping that the Spider-Man film's going to do something different, but I don't know how different it can be to the source material that we've kind of not already seen of. Spider-Man has issues, cracks a few jokes, fights the villain, gets beaten, comes back again stronger, and is victorious.
Yeah, I mean, they're at a disadvantage with Spider-Man, especially because they've already had five films in, what, the last 15 years or something? So it's, what new can they do, really, apart from... I think they've gone for a much younger Spider-Man, haven't they? Like, he's more of a teenage guy, so truer to source in that sense. But yeah, it's all just so they can tie him in with the Avengers films and everything, isn't it? But I think ultimately, and that's one of the problems with the big Marvel films, I think, as well, is that a lot of them seem to be all build up, and every film is a build up to the next film, which is a build up to the next one, and you never seem to get to that one really good film they've promised us all this time. Hopefully it'll come along eventually. I mean, I think the Infinity Wars might end up being like a nice sort of ending point for everything that they've been leading to for now, at least. But sometimes it does just feel like you're watching sort of 2.5 hour long episodes of soap operas that it's just always going to go on and on like that. But we keep waiting for that one that flops, you know. Sooner or later Marvel Studios have got to have one that people don't really like.
I guess people have said it's going to go the way of the Western, like sooner or later the bubble's gonna burst is the theory.
Yeah, you'd assume it'd have to. It's just it doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon. So.
Can do you think DC will ever be able to compete with Marvel? They, you know, the palette of DC films has been rather grey. The reviews kind of lackluster. They even said they made the money, but they don't seem to have had the charm and appeal of Marvel. They seem to be kind of trying to catch up. I just wondered if there's any hope.
Well, They seem to be a victim of the test audiences at the minute, don't they? Like, Suicide Squad seemed like they had a great film lined up, and then there was the, oh, it's gone back for reshoots. You're like, oh, no, it's going to be awful. Why have you done this? I think like maybe Wonder Woman's going to be, it looked from the trailers, it looks like it's going to be their attempt at doing that kind of like the Marvel sort of more lighthearted kind of thing. From the trailer, it looks like, you know, there's train undress scenes and things like that, which I'm not sure is necessarily what people would have wanted from a Wonder Woman film. But it's what they're going to do with it, by the look of it.
I was so frustrated when I saw the a very early trailer for Justice League, and there's a bit when Batman says, "Oh yeah, he's going to join us more or less," and Wonder Woman says something like, "Was it more? Or was it less?" And he kind of shrugs and goes, less. And I was like, I just don't think the Batman vs Superman would quip like that. I mean, it's kind of like a little, oh yeah, more or less. I think he'd just be like, yeah, he's not going to join us, like, really to the point. But suddenly they have to make this kind of little self-deprecating little gag. Do you know what I mean? It just, the tone felt a bit odd for what they'd already presented from the previous character's representation.
They seem to be struggling to sort of pick a tone and sticking with it. Mm. Whereas, like, you know, Marvel know what they're doing because they're making these sort of like intentionally, you know, funnier films and a bit more lighthearted and has all of that. Whereas DC don't seem to know whether they want to do something really dark or light and kind of end up with, you know, neither. It would seem to have, they haven't.
There's been a few articles going around about the lack of advertising for Wonder Woman. I wondered if you'd kind of also felt that, noticed that. Do you think that's kind of the kind of inherent sexism of the industry, that they're not giving it the push they might have done with a Batman or Superman flick?
I think it's hard to say now because obviously you get sort of targeted advertising with, you know, social media and things like that. I've ended up seeing the Wonder Woman trailer no end of times just because YouTube puts it on in between videos all the time. So I've seen a lot of advertising, but I haven't really seen any like print or billboard or any, you know, bus up based advertising or anything like that that you would often get for films like, you know, saw a lot of that for the Batman ones and Superman stuff. So yeah, maybe there has been less. But I think someone from DC a few years ago was quoted as saying the public just isn't ready for a Wonder Woman film. I think they said something like that, which was obviously ridiculous. So I think that not only that, people have really been, you know, crying out for at least, well, something that Wonder Woman gives them the opportunity to try to do. And obviously there's been a lot of backlash about the armpit in one of the trailers.
Because she shaves, and that's... They're like, why would she do that?
Seem to have digitally removed it or something like that.
Right,
so,
okay.
So I hear anyway. But either way, yeah, it seems like they're gonna waste another opportunity to try and present a, you know, sort of decent female-led superhero film. But I don't know, it's not out yet. Got to wait and see, give it a go. We'll definitely be reviewing it when it comes to it. So Andy's a big DC fan, so.
Banging. Anything you're excited for this coming year that's kind of in the works?
Well, Guardians 2 was one of them, and we've had that now, and that's been really good. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the new Alien film at the weekend, actually. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they've had a good one since the second one, personally. So hoping that. That might well be worth a watch. I'm quite looking forward to Blade Runner as well, the new Blade Runner film coming out, just to see what that's like, although, of course, it could be awful.
A lot of treading water over, you know, safe bets of, like, existing franchises returning to that. It seems to be kind of the order of the day, which isn't nothing new in cinema, but yeah, you know, it's interesting you've just named two films there that are kind of follow-ons from big 80s hits.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I haven't really seen anything in terms of, like, a, you know, original films that are coming out. I've seen some stuff recently, like the Belko Experiment, which quite a bit of a letdown, really. Like, it could have been a much more interesting film than it was. Instead, there was one review that said it was like Office Space and Battle Royale mixed together, and I was like, yeah, but that. It is all it is.
It doesn't try and examine anything more than just some guys killing each other in a office.
Yeah, and obviously there's all kinds of like moral issues they could have explored with that in a much more interesting way. We saw Mindhorn recently as the Julian Barrett thing, and that was a pretty good film. Actually, that was a good one. But yeah, we were talking about upcoming things earlier, and yeah, apart from some of the comic book ones and stuff like the Infinity Wars film, I think is next year or year after, stuff
yes,
like that.
Next year. So we've got Thor Ragnarok, and then kind of hot on its heels, they're hitting us with the Infinity War.
But there's always them films that kind of take you by surprise that don't get a lot of hype that come from nowhere. I mean, we've had some pretty decent horror stuff. Jennifer Kent that did The Babadook is working on a new film. So that's, I'm keeping an eye on that and seeing. Hopefully that'll be good, because that was definitely one of the more interesting films, you know, in terms of genre films for quite a long time, as well as The Witch as well last year or year before.
Don't Look, is that the new film that's kind of everyone's, I've not seen it, talking about, set in America, about the kind of liberal family that turn out to be kind of hypnotic and darkly undertones racist?
Oh, Get Out.
Get Out, yeah, not Don't Look. Yeah. I knew it was two words.
Yeah, I think that'll probably end up being the best horror film of this year, most likely, at least in terms of the ones that get big releases anyway. It was definitely an interesting one watching it in the cinema, and the things that people were reacting to and the things that they weren't reacting to as well. I mean, there's a kind of comic relief. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but there's like a kind of comic relief character, and it's like the best friend of the guy that's going to meet his girlfriend's parents. And a lot of people in the cinema kind of laughed at every single thing that he said, even when it wasn't a joke. And it was kind of almost proving the point of the film there, you know, and like overcompensating in a way that was, sort of a little bit transparently slightly dodgy. Definitely a really good film, kind of like Hitchcock in a lot of ways, with all the kind of tensions and the way that it built up what would normally be very small sort of tensions to... sort of almost absurdly hysterical levels, which really, really did make its point very well, like throughout the film. Definitely one from this year that people will be talking about for quite a long time, I think. That one.
Great. So I've just got one last little question for you, if that's okay. So, I asked Mark Kermode this question of what film would you watch before going on a protest or a demonstration to kind of fire you up? So I'm kind of asking you that. Is there kind of films that you think, with all the injustice, with all the kind of mass Toryism at the moment, the kind of clashing of two opposing values, are there some films that would kind of like get the debate going, get you sparked up for kind of opposing the state?
Yeah, I think The Educators would be one. If you've seen us about a protest, German film, I think it is about a protest group that just in sort of generally anti-capitalist stuff. They started by robbing rich people's houses, but with political intent and stuff. That's a very good one. I always end up at the end of that film thinking like, we don't do enough. We should do more things. That's a good one for that. And Steal This Movie as well, about Abbie Hoffman, the like 60s American like hippie organizer, I guess. Mm-hmm. Although sort of the actual political end of that, rather than the sitting in fields end of that. That's a good one to watch as well. Just about the kind of the 60s kind of anarchist movements and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I'd say those two.
Cool. Marty, thank you very much for chatting. Appreciate it. Now there's like scribbling a whole list of films to check out and watch and get back into it and to check out. So cheers. And I will link up to your podcast and hopefully advertise to the people that listen to this podcast, and we'll all have a nice time.
Same.
Thank you very much, dude. Take care.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Bye.
Bye.